everyone. Welcome to the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Night Roundup. We're coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C. A lot has happened, of course, in the last week. We'll get to all the subjects, and we'll get to your phone calls for this hour. Let me first give the toll-free number if you'd like to call into the program. That is 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443. Well, the first thing I guess we can talk about is the fact that Bernie Madoff went to the courtroom, went directly to jail. But that's only part of the story. I covered the media frenzy outside the U.S. courthouse at Foley Square in Manhattan. And had the opportunity to speak to a number of former Madoff securities investment employees. And what I can tell you is that as bad as Bernie Madoff is, and, you know, he's a crook, but he is the fall guy. Bernie took the fall for higher-ups. Where have we heard that before? Just like Scooter Libby and a lot of others, they want to limit the conspiracy. The criminal conspiracy, that's the government's name for these things, criminal conspiracy. It's funny, they never call you, judges never look at prosecutors in a courtroom and say, I'm not going to entertain conspiracy theories. Why are they allowed to push conspiracies, but when we talk about the government and people like Bernie, there is no time for any such mention of wider conspiracies. And one of the important things was, of course, Judge Denny Chin did not bring up, and certainly the U.S. attorney never brought up, is Bernie was never charged with criminal conspiracy, which is almost is used almost every time against any other act like this. And the reason for that is they don't want the co-conspirators named. And I'm telling you, they are much higher than he is. These are big politicians. I'll be writing about this coming week on the Wayne Mattson Report. But there's more on this story. You're only getting part of it. The media frenzy was all to say, look, Bernie's going to jail. End of story. No, it's not the end of the story. There's much more to this. That money did not disappear. You don't make $177 billion simply vanish like your David Copperfield performing some magic act. So much more on that. We'll also talk about Dick Cheney's assassination team with Seymour Hersh let out the bag this past week. I reported on that the White House, the Bush White House, was running an assassination team in 2004. I thought it was actually 05. I went back and checked the web, and it looks like I reported it on September 13, 2004. So 5 years late, you know, some of the others are picking up on it. Anyway, we will be right back with more news and your phone calls right after this short break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Roundup, coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C. on a very cold and rainy evening here in the nation's capital. Let's listen to a short clip when Bernie Madoff was in the courtroom and how the media, of course, this is the PAC media, the corporate media. They have to, you know, read from the same song sheet. They won't give you anything that hasn't been approved by higher authority, and that's their corporate masters. But let's listen to this clip. This is from MSNBC and Keith Olbermann reporting on the outcome of the Madoff trial. Sentencing for Madoff, by the way, won't be until June, but he pleaded guilty to 11 counts of fraud. But as I mentioned, Interestingly, no conspiracy charges brought against Mr. Madoff. But let's listen to this short MSNBC clip.
Today, where he pleaded guilty to all 11 counts against him. He will be sentenced in June, but the judge a short time ago remanded him into custody. Madoff has been on bail since this all unraveled back in December and has been under house arrest on Park Avenue in a swanky Manhattan apartment ever since then. He came into court today, acknowledged, he says, Your Honor, for many years I operated a Ponzi scheme. He went on to say, I'm grateful for this opportunity to speak and explain that I am deeply sorry and ashamed. He said, I cannot adequately express how sorry I am for what I have done, but he is now convicted of the 11 counts, having offered that guilty plea today. The judge says he is rescinding his bail. Madoff will go to prison. The sentencing in June, he could be sentenced to up to 150 years in prison. More on all this on MSNBC with continuing coverage.
Well, okay, there you have it. That's how the corporate media handled it. You know, Madoff going to jail. Actually, he was those of us who were outside the courtroom, we were standing there at the place where he entered the courtroom. But we all thought he was going to possum area, but Judge Denny Chin, the U.S. judge, sentenced him to immediate prison, and he was taken out the back door of the courthouse to right to the New York Metropolitan Corrections Facility. So it was a right to jail. Nobody got to see Bernie after the judge remanded him to prison. But here's how Bloomberg News reported this Madoff case. Dozens of investors, after hearing Bernard Madoff's admission that he ran a $65 billion Ponzi scheme in which he lied and stole for decades, applauded in federal court in New York as he was handcuffed and led to jail. Of course, that's what you saw. You saw some of these people in the courtroom come out, interviewed by these press scrums, cameras, and boom microphones, and that they would like you to think that's the end of the story. But it's quite interesting. This is how Bloomberg News is handling this. And Mr. Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, should not, in my opinion, think that this is all over, because Mr. Bloomberg, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, may have some problems of his own with this Madoff case, and that's where my investigation is taking me, and that's where I'm going to be heading with it on the website, on the Wayne Master Report this coming week. Let's just put it this way. Bernie Madoff was not the guy in charge of this Ponzi scheme, and it wasn't just $65 billion. It's now estimated that $177 billion was involved. There's also clear indications that there may have been a link between Bernie's operation and American International Group, AIG's operation, and possibly, quote-unquote, Sir Alan Stanford's operation. Understand, all three had offices in London, and oddly enough, all three offices in London were small, one- or two-room operations. Hardly any major equipment, small staffs. It's now estimated that there was a report that AIG may have lost $500 million from this small storefront operation in London. Folks, what we see here, and this is very clear from when I spoke to people who worked for Madoff, this is an intelligence, massive, mega slush fund for intelligence agencies, one domestic, and we all know who they are, CIA, you know, who else would it be, and a foreign intelligence agency, and no surprise there either, Israel's Mossad, working hand in glove, of course, with the Russian-Israeli mafia. This is not coming from me. This is coming from people who worked right alongside Bernie Madoff. They came to me and admitted this, and this is what the case is. But it's even deeper than that and gets higher than that. Bernie was a second-tier player in this operation, a significant player, but nonetheless second-tier. There are people who are above Bernie. They will not go to jail. Bernie's taking the fall. Bernie will not be seen or heard from him because the powers that be want to keep it that way. They want to ensure that Bernie goes off eventually to some federal prison. The Bureau of Prisons will limit access to him, and that's just fine with some of these people. As far as the political aspect of this, it's Republicans and Democrats both. Neither one can point a finger. Madoff, of course, was the SEC under a Bush appointee. Christopher Cox basically turned a blind eye to what Madoff was doing. And keep in mind one thing. Madoff Investment Securities was a legitimate trading operation on Wall Street. Everything they did was monitored by the SEC. Everything in that part of Madoff's company was above board, monitored, and legitimate. It was Madoff's personal investment operation where this money was siphoned off. And much of it's sent abroad. I asked one longtime Madoff employee, where did the money go? He said, you got to understand what Bernie was doing. It was a pump and dump operation. You pump money out of the U.S. economy and dump it to some other place. And I inquired, what is that other place? And the answer was a simple one-word answer. Israel. It's not that the money's going to remain there, and that's where I'm going with the investigation. The money will eventually, you don't make that kind of money disappear. That money will wind up in being invested in other projects to make even more money. And that's where Mr. Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, might have something to worry about. Of course, Bloomberg, when it comes to politics, this guy's a master chameleon. He was a Democrat. He became a Republican, and I think he's an independent now. And it's hard to tell, but this guy's a criminal. This guy's a crook. I don't care how many billions this guy has. I don't care how many newspapers and wire services he owns. This guy, he decided he wanted to become a politician. He's aiming for Albany. He wants to be the governor of New York so he can do to the state of New York what he's done to the city of New York, and that is he wants to turn the city and the state into a playground for his mega rich friends. And as far as the people, the working class in New York, well, you've got Bloomberg. I don't know how you're going to handle him. He figures you're all like plantation inhabitants on his personal private plantation. You know, look at history. What did the slaves do to some of the slave owners? And maybe you figure out. Mr. Goldberg, Michael. I'm sorry, Mayor Bloomberg will have some problems in the future when the people finally get all of him and tar and feather him. But anyway, that's what's coming down in New York. This is a huge story. Do not look to the corporate media to cover this story adequately, because they won't. Because when I talk corporate media, I just mention one of them. Who is it? Bloomberg News, owned by Mayor Bloomberg. You look at some of the others out there, and it's the same situation. The MSNBC is owned by General Electric. NBC, owned by General Electric, and of course a joint operation with Microsoft. Bill Gates, these people made their money the old-fashioned way. They stole it, and until we have an administration, and I'm afraid that the Obama administration is not the administration that's going to crack down on these people. It's going to be business as usual. Let's look at who the oversight people were for Mr. Madoff and his operation in Congress. His buddy Chuck Schumer was the regulator for on the Senate side for the financial industry. A friend of mine calls Schumer, who covered New York politics for a number of years, calls him Schmuck Schumer. And then we have on the House side another recipient of Madoff political contributions, Barney Frank. Barney Frank over there, and so yet we have Barney Frank and we have Schmuck Schumer basically as our supposed representatives providing oversight over people like Bernie and Bernie's friends and Bernie's superiors. We wonder why billions and billions of dollars have been basically looted from the United States economy, because these are the people who were at the switch. They knew what was going on. They were bought and paid for. Schumer needs to resign from the Senate immediately, not Roland Burris from Illinois over some Illinois politics. But we will talk about that and some other things after we come back from this short break. This is Wayne Madsen from Washington.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Madsen with the Wayne Madsen Report, the Saturday Roundup, coming live from Washington, D.C. this evening. Anyway, we were talking about Bernie Madoff and those who were really pulling the strings. I have to say that the judge who handled his case at the in the end, there was another judge who let him go back to his Upper East Side a condominium, luxurious condominium. But this judge, Denny Chin, he comes out of the Southern District of New York U.S. Attorney's Office. He used to work for one Rudy Giuliani. Don't be surprised to see Giuliani as being part of this whole money operation. And Denny Chin worked for him. And Denny Chin also was served on a bench and worked with one Michael Mukasey. And Michael Mukasey, of course, was the Attorney General under Bush. And Michael Mukasey's son, Mark, works for the law firm of Bracewell Giuliani. And who is Mark Mukasey representing? But Frank DePasquale, who was the chief financial officer for Bernie Madoff. This is not 6 degrees of separation, ladies and gentlemen. This is all in the same little parlor room. And it's not going to be hard to figure out how this how Bernie did not do this alone, certainly did not do this alone. But that's what the media wants you to think, and they'll try to get away with it, because some of the media, like Mayor Bloomberg, may have some problems himself before this is all said and done. Let's also talk about what happened this past week to Admiral Dennis Blair, who is the Obama Director of National Intelligence, chose Chaz Freeman, former U.S. Ambassador to Saudi Arabia, to head up his National Intelligence Council. That was looked okay until the Israel lobby decided that Chaz Freeman was just a little bit too even-handed on Middle East policies for their liking, and decided to launch a big campaign against Chaz Freeman. Chaz Freeman this past week stepped down as the head of the National Intelligence Council, which was one interesting thing. That was not that did not require Senate confirmation. So the Israel lobby, what they had to do was just really demonize Freeman in the media to get a public reaction. Well, it was public reaction. I mean, this is inside politics here in Washington. Of course, what Pat Buchanan calls the Amen Corner, Israel's support group in Congress. When somebody once told me, why don't we just make Israel a state? And I was told by someone else, they said, well, why would they want to become a state? They'd then only be limited to having two U.S. senators, when right now, of course, they have 100 in their pocket. So the campaign to discredit Freeman started. It was nasty. He pulled out. Let's listen to this short clip. What we're going to hear is the report. First, we're going to hear Freeman speaking about the Iraq war. He thought that was terrible. Of course it was terrible. But, of course, the Israel lobby doesn't want to have anyone in a significant position who was vocally against the Iraq war. So let's listen. This was down at the Miller Institute, University of Virginia, a debate where Freeman was really going after Bush for invading Iraq, if we can listen to this clip of
Iraq
Ambassador
Freeman. Stands as a monument to the discipline and the professionalism of our military and the utter ineptitude of our civilian leadership. If we continue in Iraq along the way we are, no, we know exactly what's going to happen. There will continue to be 80,000 Iraqis ethnically cleansed and moved out of their homes each month. There will continue to be thousands of dead Iraqis and hundreds of dead Americans. We will continue to forfeit our leadership internationally and to neglect problems elsewhere in the world. If we stay in Iraq, as was the case in Saudi Arabia, where the Al-Qaeda problem originated, we will create the irritations that feed terrorism and multiply our enemies manyfold. If we do not talk to the Iranians except in the letter we have, which basically is a five-part message. One, you're evil. Second, we won't talk to you until you give up and surrender and accept our terms. Number three, we intend to overthrow your regime regardless of what you do. And number four, if you don't cooperate with this diplomatic course I've just outlined, we are very likely to bomb you. And if you try to develop a deterrent against our bombing you, we will certainly bomb you. Then we will get nowhere. If we leave Iraq under circumstances in which we play...
Well, there you heard it. There you heard Ambassador Freeman. And, you know, here he had... You know, that's what really killed him with the lobby. He's a realist when it comes to Middle East politics. And, of course, the Israel lobby doesn't want realism. They want people that sing the praises, do everything the Israelis tell them to do. Now, the new government of Israel, the last government was a coalition government, included labor, and look what they did in Gaza, the horrible genocide that took place in Gaza. But now look at this new government. Netanyahu's a war criminal, and we'll talk about Netanyahu and who's going to be the new Israeli foreign minister when we come back from this short break. This is Wayne Massey, D.C.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Madsen with the Wayne Madsen Report, the Saturday Roundup, coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C. And the toll-free number, if you'd like to call in to the program, is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. We're before the break talking about Chaz Freeman, the former U.S. ambassador to Saudi Arabia, who was nominated to be the head of the National Intelligence Council under the director of National Intelligence, Admiral Blair. He withdrew his name after receiving much criticism because he was just too even-handed on Middle East policy. Now, they demonized Chaz Freeman, the lobby, the Israel lobby. But when it comes to this new government in Israel, which is extremely right-wing, Prime Minister is Benjamin Netanyahu, or some people would call him Nutty Yahu, or Nutty Yahoo, whatever, whatever you wish. He's bad enough. But the man who may wind up as the foreign minister of Israel is a man named Avigdor Lieberman. This guy is a neo-Nazi. Make no mistake about it, he's a neo-Nazi. Some of the things Mr. Lieberman advocates is, for example, drowning Palestinian detainees in the Dead Sea. You might want to consider the Sea of Galilee, because as that was pointed out to me, the Dead Sea is so salty, it would be very hard to drown somebody in the Dead Sea because, you know, the salt makes you float. But obviously, Mr. Lieberman is not the sharpest knife in the drawer of Israeli cutlery. And he's advocated other things like making Israel's 1 million Arab citizens take loyalty oaths. Yavoh, Herr Lieberman. Lieberman, of course, is a kingpin in the Russian-Israeli mafia. He comes from the wonderful nation of Moldova. Moldova, which is was a major, major nexus, still is, for people like Viktor Bout, who the Russian-born, actually was born in Tajikistan, the mercenary, who the movie The Lord of War was modeled after this character, Viktor Bout, who's now in prison in Thailand facing potential extradition to the United States. We would like to get Bout off the street because he knows too much as well. He knows about as much as Bernie Madoff in different areas, but we're talking about the same sort of illegal activities that go on around the world that are basically tolerated by our Justice Department and our FBI and our CIA and all these other wonderful institutions we have in this country. Let these people literally get away with murder. And it'll be quite interesting to see if the United States, the Obama administration, with Lieberman as foreign minister, allows him to visit this country. I think he should be on he should not get a U.S. visa to visit here. The man is a racist. He's a neo-Nazi. What was good enough for Kurt Waldheim should be good enough for Avigdor Lieberman. But watch what the lobby will do. They'll say, oh, he's not that bad. You know, it'd be like, you know, and had we not gone to war with Germany, in 1947, President Truman inviting Adolf Hitler to the United States for a state visit. He was bad once, but, you know, we've gotten over that. We're trying to get good relations now with Germany. But that's what it would be like. But let's listen to this clip of getting back to what they did to Chaz Freeman. This is how the cycle works with the Israel lobby. Obviously, Fox News is an owned and operated subsidiary of the lobby. Let's listen to how Fox News handled the nomination of Chaz Freeman and who they went to for a quote in the House of Representatives. We can listen to this short clip.
And now, some fresh pickings from the political grapevine. The Obama administration is pleading ignorance over complaints about the president's pick to head the National Intelligence Council. Chaz Freeman is a former U.S. ambassador to Saudi Arabia, who now runs a Saudi-funded Washington think tank. A bipartisan congressional group wants a review of Freeman's ties to the kingdom to guard against a conflict of interest. House Minority Whip Eric Cantor says Freeman's past associations and positions on foreign policy are deeply alarming. One of those foreign policy issues is an email Freeman sent in 2006 where he called the 1989 Chinese government crackdown at Tiananmen Square, in which at least 2,500 are believed to have died, quote, overly cautious. ABC News reports that when asked if administration officials were aware of such concerns, Press Secretary Robert Gibbs said, I've not read those.
Well, okay, there you have it. Eric Cantor, this up-and-coming Republican in the House leadership, he's owned and operated by the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. He's one of theirs, so why go to him for a comment? Of course, then here you have Fox quoting ABC. I mean, you know, it's all the same bunch of people. So Chaz Freeman was demonized. They got him for, you know, but you saw the diversion, how they said, oh, it's really not Middle East. It's that he supported China. Wait a minute. China? I mean, it's the country that owns our debt? The country that George H.W. Bush did nothing as a result of Tiananmen Square. He was the president of the United States. He did absolutely nothing to sanction China after Tiananmen Square. Where was the criticism of Bush at the time? It's diversionary tactics. Oh, it's not Freeman's policies on the Middle East. It's what he's too close to China. Well, since when has that ever gotten anyone disqualified from holding office or holding a position of influence in this country? It didn't seem to matter when George H.W. Bush became president as an ex-envoy to Red China. Then it was known as Red China when he was over there. It's the People's Republic. But it was okay for Bush, but it's not okay for Freeman. You see, this is the devious nature of the lobby, how they manipulate the public opinion, how they manipulate how the media covers these stories. But Freeman pulled out this past week, and he fired off a blistering letter where he everything in there you can just you know, basically he just called the shots as he saw them on AIPAC, but I have a funny feeling the lobby may have jumped the shark on this one. It'll be very interesting to see who will become the head of the National Intelligence Council. I'll tell you, if it's a pro-Israeli show like a lot of the other people that are coming into this administration is going to have some real significant problems. Apparently it was Rahm Emanuel who weighed in the end against Ambassador Freeman. Anyway, we have Deborah on the line from Baltimore. Let's go to Deborah from Baltimore.
Hey, Wayne, another great show as usual.
Well, thank you. Good to have you on. Thanks for calling.
I mean, I just don't know what it takes for the vast majority of the American public to wake up to the fact that the country is really, you know, being run by people that are pro-Israeli. And the pro,
yeah.
When I say pro-Israeli, I mean pro-Zionism.
There's no other form of government over there. When you look at the wall they're constructing, this is all from Theodore Herzl's dream of what he called the Judenstaat, which has no defined boundaries. As a matter of fact, it's often said that the two lines on the Israeli flag, the two blue lines, one stands for the Nile, and the other one represents the Euphrates. And I suppose his idea was everything in between.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's Greater Israel's plan.
Yeah.
It has
yeah.
been for quite some time. And
the
sooner the sooner people wake up and realize that Mersheimer and Walt in their 2000 book, Israeli
right.
Lobby and the U.S. Foreign Policy, they weren't kidding.
Oh, no, they weren't. I remember how they were demonized just like Chaz Freeman was. I mean, it was awful. I mean, and we've seen it happen so many times. Anybody who my friend James Bamford wrote a book called The Shadow Factory, where he talked about Israeli intelligence penetration of U.S. telecommunications and U.S. intelligence even. And, of course, Jim was, you know, beaten up pretty badly in reviews,
nobody wants to talk about Amdocs and the connection between Amdocs and 9/11.
Exactly. And then that gets into what, you know, there was a strange thing where Fox News, it's easy to beat up on Fox News, but there was a four-part series done by Fox News, introed by Britt Hume,
Cameron.
Of all people,
right.
And Carl Cameron. And they went into the Israeli urban moving systems, the art students, the DEA report, and then they got into Amdocs and Comverse Infosys, which is now called Verint, and they went into all that. And it was just so out of, you know, is this Fox News? And I said, why did that occur that way? And what I was told is that Fox, Brick Hume was at a Christmas party, and I forget what year it was, but it must have been about 2002, December 2002. He was at a Christmas party at Dick Cheney's residence, the official White Vice President's residence, and Dick Cheney went to Brick Hume. Apparently Cheney was having some problems with Ariel Sharon at the time and
really?
Dropped this bit of information. So that tells me Cheney knew the whole thing and believed it. But he gave Fox, he gave Brit Hume a little bit of this and said, you know, have at it, you know. And of course, you know, Fox doesn't do anything without the White House, you know, giving him a wink and a nod, at least that White House. And they ran that four-part series, and that was basically Cheney's way of letting Sharon know, if you make this uncomfortable for me, I can make things uncomfortable for you. But the thing is, in the end, that story was buried, and I think eventually Fox removed it from their website.
I can't even find it on archives. I imagine somebody's mirrored it somewhere, but...
Yeah, it's on. I think it's on YouTube. I think
YouTube.
You can get it on YouTube. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
But
that is that was just an amazing thing. And but yeah, I mean, that, and there's been several articles that, you know, well, the other thing about, I should have mentioned this about Chaz Freeman. The guy that was leading the campaign against Chaz Freeman was Steve Rosen.
Rosen, an AIPAC spy.
An AIPAC spy who's, by the way, then the very next day after Freeman steps down, the Washington Post in an editorial calls for the government to drop their prosecution of Rosen and Weissman. I mean,
Operation Mockingbird in its true form.
Yes. I mean, these guys are charged under the Espionage Act for taking classified information from a Pentagon employee and passing it to a Mossad guy at the Israeli embassy.
Right, and Connie Rice was involved in that as well.
Oh, they all were. I mean, you know, yeah. And that gets into the next thing I was going to talk about is this operation that Cy Hirsch revealed. I wrote about the assassination team. Assassination team that was going around. They said killing people in Afghanistan. I suggest that they were involved in some very high-level assassinations in Lebanon. I reported
the Polonium poisoning.
And I stated that the team is run out of the West. Rafik Hariri, the former Lebanese prime minister, was a hit on him because two things he did, and we wanted him out of the way. He was negotiating with Hezbollah, and he was opposed to the establishment of a U.S. air base in the north of Lebanon that might... that was seen as a possible replacement for our base in Incirlik in Turkey, because there was some problems with our relations with Turkey at the time. They wouldn't let us use that base for the attack on Iraq. We wanted it replaced, so they had to get Hariri out of the way, and they arranged a hit on him. He was not the first Lebanese politician who was assassinated in a car bombing to get somebody uncomfortable out of the way. I first reported that the White House, the Bush White House, was involved in the assassination of Elihu Baker, who was getting ready to testify against Ariel Sharon in a human rights court in Brussels for the Sabra and Shatila massacres against Palestinian refugees in Beirut in 1983. So this was known about for a number of years, and only... You know, Cy's a great investigator reporter, but only when Cy mentioned it out in Minnesota did some of the media pick up on this.
It'll get buried.
Oh, it already is. You don't hear much about it anymore.
You know, I mean, what's your take on Obama and, you know, slaughtering Pakistanis now?
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, it's so easy to kill, you know, these people who are living, you know, basically as people lived 800 years ago, they don't have anything but their sheep and their goats and their, you know, but it's so easy to kill these people and I guess feel good about it. I just don't get that. But I'm having severe buyer's remorse with Barack Obama.
Yeah, I didn't vote for him, so I don't have too much remorse.
Yeah, I have voted in so many elections and, you know, my candidate has always lost, and I said, well, at least this is a little bit different, you know. And it's not really that different, as we now know. It's pretty much the same. I mean, he's now saying he's getting rid of the enemy combatant term
that just came out.
Well, that's because he already said there's no more global war on terrorism. So if there's no more global war on terrorism, of course, you get to have a war, you need combatants. So all he's doing is changing. It's almost like George Orwell. He's changing the names around.
Definitely newspeak.
It's newspeak. It's totally newspeak.
And that's basically what I see, what I saw in his campaigns and what I see. Now, I can't stand to listen to him, and he hasn't been for what?
I know. And I mean, it's somebody said, you know, he could be a one-termer, another Democratic one-termer like Jimmy Carter. I says, I wish Jimmy Carter were the president right now.
At least he was more outspoken about the treatment of the Palestinians.
And we saw how he was demonized, terribly, like in the situation in Gaza and the West Bank to the apartheid in South Africa. It's certainly very similar.
And what was it, yesterday or the day before, they shot an American with...
There was somebody protesting the wall. I would say that the one difference between South Africa, apartheid South Africa, and Israel is the apartheid regime never built walls. I mean, this is a full-blown a wall separating communities. And you know, even the apartheid people, as bad as they were, never contemplated building walls. Of course,
oh, no,
it's a much bigger country. But
this is off the chain. In fact, there were members from the South African Congress that went to visit the Gaza and came back and said, you know, we had lived through the apartheid, and this is so much worse.
Yes, yes, yes. And we also know now, because of people like Jack Abramoff, that Abramoff was actually an agent for the apartheid regime during the 1980s here in Washington. And you know, the rest, you know, of course, what was the apartheid regime doing back then? But they were cooperating with Israel to develop nuclear weapons capabilities. So there were a lot of connections there. But Deborah, we're up on a break, but thanks for calling in, and we'll talk more about your political campaign in future shows. We need to hear more about that. Okay. This is Wayne Madsen, and we will be right back after this short break. Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Madsen with Wayne Madsen Report, the Saturday Roundup. I'm coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C., and we've been talking about Bernie Madoff. We've been talking about the demonization of Chaz Freeman to head up the National Intelligence Council, and we're talking about what Cy Hirsch talked about this week about an assassination team being run directly out of Dick Cheney's office in the White House. Let me just read. This is what I wrote in March of 05. I talked about a team run out of the Bush White House that was responsible for assassinations, particularly two high-level assassinations in Lebanon, that of former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri and that of a former Christian militia leader Eli Hobeika, who Hariri was negotiating with Hezbollah at the time, opposed to a U.S. airbase. Hobeika was prepared to testify against Ariel Sharon, the then Israeli Prime Minister, for his participation in the massacre of innocent civilian Palestinian refugees at the camps in Sabra and Shatila in Beirut. I wrote, a number of intelligence sources have reported that assassinations of foreign leaders like Hariri and Hobeika are ultimately authorized by two key White House officials, Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove and Deputy National Security Advisor Elliot Abrams. In addition, Abrams is the key liaison between the White House and Sharon's office for such covert operations, including political assassinations. Quote, Abrams is the guy they, the Israelis, go to for a wink and a nod for such ops, reported one key source. Well, that was 05. Cy Hirsch reports it last week. You know, some of the corporate media pick up on it, but you see, that's how it operates. You know, I'm not saying Cy Hirsch is a gatekeeper, but certainly these corporate types are. That story has probably already disappeared. There probably won't be any follow-ups on it because of where it may lead. Now, if you're the Bush White House and you're going to kill people in political assassinations indiscriminately, was it just overseas, or could it have potentially been here in the United States? And I would suggest that White House was so out of control, and I hope Senator Leahy gets off this thing about a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. No, we need prosecutions. We don't need to learn, Senator Leahy, learn from our mistakes. We need to prevent it from happening again, and more importantly, we need to bring those to justice who carried out and ordered these political assassinations, possibly against some of your colleagues, Senator Leahy. How about Senator Paul Wellstone, Senator Leahy? How about him? Are you just going to let the potential assassins of him and his family off the hook just so we can learn, Senator Leahy? Senator Leahy, get in line behind Senator Schumer. Get out. Take Conyers with you. Take Barney Frank with you. You Democrats are as pathetic in some cases as these awful Republicans. And I must say that I'm experiencing great schadenfreude in watching the Republican Party collapse around the likes of Michael Steele and Rush Limbaugh. Nothing better could happen. I hope that party is relegated to the history books along with the Know Nothing Party and some of the other parties that collapsed in the past. We can only hope. and we can only hope that the Democratic Party, unless it changes, goes the same way. But anyway, that will do it for this week. Thanks for joining us tonight live on the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Roundup. And we will be back with you this time next week. And we'll leave you with the theme song from the great movie, The Virginian. This is Wayne Mattson from D.C.